County cricket, international cricket, test cricket, franchise cricket, red ball, white ball, 100 ball cricket. At The Cricketer, we care about the cricket you love. And that's why we've launched a brand new app built for fans of the English game. Download The Cricketer app and sign up to our Access All Areas Pass to receive agenda-setting journalism and illuminating storytelling straight to your phone. The latest news from the England camps, a dedicated daily service for fans of the 18 first-class counties, and committed coverage of women's cricket. Download the app today and enjoy 1 month of free unlimited access. The Cricketer. We care about the cricket you love.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special episode of TCCP is none other than hard-hitting Glamorgan all-rounder Callum Taylor. So Callum, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how has your day been so far?
Oh, look, mate, I could say it's been really hard, but, you know, the Aussie sun hits a bit different over here, so can't really complain. But, you know, it's been a good day over here in Australia, so enjoying my, my post-season, pre-season over here. So, yeah, look, loving it, and, yeah, had a great day here.
I can't lie. For the listeners out there, obviously you can't see this. Callum looks like he is living the life of luxury in Australia. And just for those who don't know, Cal, whereabouts in Aussie are you based at the moment?
I'm based on the Gold Coast in a place called Mermaid Beach. It probably speaks for itself, but yeah, look, it's a lovely part of the world, and, you know, it's great to come here most years and, well, you know, most post-seasons and just sit back and relax and enjoy the Aussie summer.
Yeah, it sounds like paradise, that, to be honest. The Gold Coast, lovely place. Must admit, I'm guessing you've been to Metricon or the Carrara Oval, to give its proper name.
Yeah, been there a few times. It's got its own little touch, obviously more base for AFL, but I think the Brisbane Heat have had their fair share of games there. But look, hopefully they open it up for potentially more international games or whatnot.
Fingers crossed. I mean, obviously the most famous incident at the Carrara Oval, David Gower and the Tiger Moth, that's always going to be associated with the Gold Coast as a cricketing region. So fortunately, Callum, we aren't here to talk about David Gower and the Tiger Moth incident today as much as we probably could, because it is a famous moment in English cricketing history. Instead, we're here to discuss your cricketing journey to date. And of course, with any journey, every single story has a start. It has its origin. So Callum, with your cricketing story, what was that start point?
Look, it's hard to completely reflect on where it all started. I think I've had, like, my parents have told me certain things, certain glimpses and whatnot. But I think for me, it's obviously probably been watching, growing up here in Australia, watching Australia play itself at the Gabba. And even, you know, my first sort of experience of playing more often than not would have been in the backyard cricket under the Aussie sun. But look, yeah, I'd say my first sort of main glimpses were, yeah, watching Australia play under the likes of Ricky Ponting, Damien Martin, those sort of names. And that's sort of how I, yeah, got my first look at cricket. And look, I probably started at the age of about 8 or 9, just with my brother's being a bit older, playing cricket above me. And yeah, look, I guess that sort of petered into itself where I just enjoyed the game and started playing at school, which then took over to playing, you know, club cricket on a Saturday, really, in juniors.
It's funny how it starts, isn't it? A cricketing journey. And that is a really, really nice pathway into the game. And obviously some massive names there. Ricky Ponting, just the second all-time leading test run scorer in cricket history. Yeah, not bad. The Tasmanian Devil, as we knew him here in England, because he was always a thorn in the Three Lions side. And Damien Martin, a criminally underrated player. So, so good, wasn't he?
Absolutely.
Brilliant, brilliant cricketer. And actually, talking of those names, because those, I'm guessing, would have played quite a large influence in those tentative steps in the game. Were there anybody else, I suppose, Callum, in the game of cricket, either domestic or international, that you tried to look up to and emulate almost in those earliest of years, per se?
I think when I was really young, I think I basically, yeah, looked up to Ricky Ponting as like my first sort of thought in cricket. Like he would be the one that I went bang, like I'd buy his bats, his sort of kit, like that sort of Kookaburra Kahuna range, even the black graphite bat, that was the one I went to early on. I think that was my first cricket bat. So, which was, yeah, look, unbelievable. And obviously he kind of, he flooded out of the game as I got a little bit older. We went into more coaching roles, and I think that paved the way for players like Michael Clark and David Warner to sort of come into my recognition, I suppose. And I tried to mimic my game a lot of Michael Clark, I'd say. He was probably my second cricket bat, which is Slazenger. And then I'd say my third cricket bat was a David Warner Kaboom. So you can see where this is heading. But actually, as I got a little bit older, teenage years in school cricket and sort of district level cricket, I ended up looking a lot at Joss Butler, which was a bit of a random one for people over here. But he was someone that was coming through at the time in county cricket and setting it alight in Somerset, and obviously in his move up to Lancashire. But he was definitely someone that I was emulating my game a little bit about. I don't think now these days I have much in him, like much of his game in mind, but it was something when I was growing up that I was really, you know, taking on for sure.
Well, I can't argue with the choice of Joss Butler. Absolutely fantastic. A real trailblazer and innovator in the game of cricket. And Michael Clark, so classy. Really was, yeah. An outstanding leader as well, it has to be said, for Australia. And I'm noticing a bit of a pattern here, Callum, when it comes to your choices, aside from Joss Butler, all Australian. So I have to ask quite a pertinent question. Who do you support in the Ashes?
That is a funny one. To be honest, I literally just sat back and just watched and see how it unfolded. Look, I wanted... there's people, obviously, I know playing in that Ashes series, so... The likes of Marnus that also plays at Glamorgan. So obviously wanted him to go really well. But look, at the same time, it was one of those ones where I grew up adoring Australia when I was younger, and getting into the, you know, the UK system, knowing that when I play international cricket, that will be my path into, you know, it would be England really. So I think over the last couple of years, I've kind of become a lot more neutral in doing so, because obviously a lot of the boys are cricket lovers in the dressing room, absolutely adore it, and obviously adore English cricket in general. So it was one of those ones where I sat back, took a neutral path, and just said, look, whatever unfolds.
Probably for the best, to be honest. Yeah. Maybe leaning slightly more towards the Australians this time around. It was
I'm not a bandwagoner, I'll put it that way.
Good to hear. But honestly, from an English perspective, goodness me, it has been the winter of discontents as far as we're concerned with the men's and the women's Ashes, to be fair. We got hammered in both. So definitely Australia's summer, I suppose. But hey, we'll be back in 2023. That's all I'll say. And talking of the immortal urn, I have to ask this, Callum. What is your favourite ever Ashes moment? If you could go back and relive one day of the Ashes, any series from any era, which day would you choose and why?
I think from a personal one, because something I actually saw with my own eyes, not on TV, I was actually there, was definitely, I just got to the Gabba. I got there a bit later in the game, or in the day one, and it was the first test. Forget which year it was, but it was the first test at the Gabba. I've walked past the Barmy Army. And as I walked past the Barmy Army, Peter Siddle, I think he nicked off Alistair Cook. It was the start of his hat trick. And I was walking past the Barmy Army, who were purring at the time because England were going okay. Day one at the Gabba, it does a little bit spicy there. And, you know, for once they went quiet. And then the second wicket, and then obviously I hadn't even sat down yet. I was behind the sight screen. Where behind Brad Haddin, and where the batsman would have been, well, Stuart Broad it was at the time, was facing up, and bang, you saw it hit him on the toe. And I actually think that a little bit of the Barmy Army were a bit like, they went up as well, thinking that it was a bit amazing what was just happening. And that was probably my first glimpse of, actually watching something live that really made me, you know, the goosebumps, the hair on my, you know, on my neck just stand up and go, wow, that is something to behold. And I'd say, like, as well, just a moment that you'd want to be there for was probably that test. I think it was at the Oval, 2005, maybe, where Australia had that fight back of being 7-8 down, and they nearly won the game where Kasperwitz got caught down the leg side by Jones. That would have been something I would have loved to have been there for, that just that whole day. But yeah, look, I can't go past actually seeing something in my own eyes where Peter Siddle's hat-trick was just phenomenal.
To be honest, that's made me a little bit envious, because that is an iconic moment in recent Ashes history. Obviously, more from an Australian perspective. I can't say I was celebrating at the time as an Englishman, but just the commentary as well. He's got a hat-trick on his birthday. It was just absolutely sensational. Great Ashes moment. And 2005 as well, so many moments you could choose from that incredible series. That game at Edgbaston with that final wicket stand.
That's it, Edgbaston.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. And at the time, I wasn't watching cricket at the time. I was only 4 years old in 2005. But again, if there was one day, it'd probably be that or Ben Stokes at Headingley. It'd be between those two.
I think you can't go past that one. But look, that was something that I don't think everyone was gripped to their seats. I think everyone watched that one. So it's just, that was unbelievable as well.
In fact, Callum, just before we get on to more of your cricketing journey, I have to ask you about that actually, because a lot of counties were actually playing on that day. I still remember it quite vividly. It was day four up at Headingley. But for example, I was at Edgbaston on the day watching Warwickshire versus Northants in the T20 Blast. Do you remember where you were on that day? Because I seem to remember during that game, there was a game of cricket going on and there was just so much noise behind the bars at Edgbaston. And even at one point in that game, play stopped when Ben Stokes hit the winning runs. It was absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. I was actually, I think the day before was my second ever T20 game for Glamorgan. It was actually my first proper one, because it was actually on Sky against Somerset at Taunton. And the game before, which was my debut, it was actually ended up being rained off after a certain amount of overs. But that was the day before the phenomenal day with Ben Stokes. So that was when Ben Stokes and Root put on a big partnership, and we're watching that before our game. They got to stumps and obviously played. And then the next day, I think I was, I went up to my grandparents' house in Wales and just watched it there with them. And I couldn't believe what I was watching, to be honest.
Yeah, it was incredible. I still don't think it sunk in, to be completely honest. It was ridiculous. And Jack Leach as well, the best one out of all time. I know some people might say it was Mukarintini in that incredible run chase against Australia, funny enough. But for me, it's Leachy polishing those glasses, standing tall at the other end, blocking out everything. What a day that was. Again,
absolutely one which will...
Yeah, incredible.
Cold hero, Leachy.
100%. That will never, ever be forgotten by either English or Australian fans, even wider cricket fans as well. It's just, again, like the Peter Siddle hat-trick, like Edgbaston 2005, that Ben Stokes and Jack Leach partnership, iconic with a capital I, shall we say. But it's funny there you mentioned Wales, actually, Callum, because so far this conversation has centred mostly around Australia, but you were actually born in Wales itself. You moved to Australia at a young age. How did the move back to Wales materialise in the first place? How did that actually come about, per se?
It is a little bit of an interesting story. After school, I always thought of going on a gap year. A lot of my mates were getting visas at the time to go over the UK, go on a gap year, go to a cricket club in England, play for, you know, a season, and then come back to Australia for the Australian season. And I was obviously in the same boat, but actually knowing I had a British passport was something that, that I knew I'd go over as more of a domestic player. So I wouldn't actually need all the, you know, all the perks and whatnot, which would have been still nice, obviously, as I am a British resident and an Aussie resident. But initially I was actually going to go to a club in the Surrey League called Sutton Cricket Club. And funnily enough, I think it didn't transpire because I think one of their leaders in their first team you know, was retiring or things like that. They wanted to go for a more experienced pro, and which was understandable. And look, that they were good like that, and let me know pretty quickly. And I needed other options from there. And my dad just got in contact with the Knight brothers, the Knight twins, down at Newport Cricket Club, which is now really been my home away from home down there in Newport, which is, you know, unbelievable there. I think my dad said to me that Newport had a bit of potential, like they were coming up, like the team was coming up. They had some good players playing there. He got in contact with them quite early, and it's actually quite funny because they asked my dad for like, oh, what does Callum do? What sort of representative cricket has he played? And my dad told them a few things, like Queensland under-19s, Queensland under-17s, stuff like that. And when they didn't, they kind of thought a lot. They get a few people put in emails saying that they chat a bit of rubbish and whatnot. And funnily enough, I rocked up, and yeah, that they kind of thought straight away, like, look, like he can play a bit. And it was quite funny them saying, oh, they thought I was chatting a bunch of rubbish at the time. And I can actually imagine that they'd get so many emails of people saying, oh, I've played this sort of standard and whatnot. But that was sort of how it all unfolded there. And yeah, look, I played my first season in Wales for Newport Cricket Club, which was, you know, it was amazing. And look, the club that when I first started there, the club has just gone straight through the roof. And to even Newport to have first class cricket back there was just unbelievable to see through the time that I've been there.
It certainly is, and very promising for the area as well, isn't it? Newport. It's quite a nice ground, if I'm not mistaken. Is it the one? Is it like a sports complex? Is it that one?
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been. They I've used been to past be. It.
Yeah, they used to be based in Rodney Parade, which was the basically where the rugby and the football gets played in Newport. But they obviously had to move over there. Which, I'm not complaining about it. It's a good little spot down there, right next to the Welsh FA. Yeah, sometimes exactly. You get a few. Few big names down there playing football.
Go so on, always like who?
Patrick Vieira down there for a coaching.
No, you didn't.
Clinic.
Yeah, no,
you,
didn't.
You see, saw Gareth Bale down there and the Welsh boys. So get some big names down there doing their coaching courses and helping out.
Well, I'll tell you what, Callum, I'm an Arsenal fan. So to hear that name, Patrick Vieira, oh my goodness, that's incredible. You should have challenged him to a net.
Oh, well, look, I'm a Man United supporter, so I had a bit of Roy Keane in me, so I probably, probably would have left it there.
Oh, fair enough. Crikey, it is a nice place, though, Newport. I'm not sure that... I don't think it's got a Royal London One Day Cup game this season, though, which is a little bit of a shame, but time will tell. We'll have to wait and see. Fingers crossed for the people of Newport that they do get Glamorgan playing there in due course. But before talk about Glam, I just want to talk a little bit about the Welsh minor counties, because I wanted to know about your experiences in national county cricket. How did that compare to your experiences in Australia, for example, under-19 cricket in Queensland?
I found minor counties cricket extremely competitive, just the way it's played. I think you have a lot of club cricketers that have, I'd say, you know, chips on their shoulders, a bit more egos than your everyday player. And when teams come against Wales, we have basically a bunch of young boys just trying to make it, really. Like, we play probably the youngest team out there, a bunch of the Glamorgan Academy players, under-19s, under-18s players. Look, there's never that many boys that are over the age of 25. And if there is, there's only one, two, or three. So every time we play against a minor county, they give it their all and try show us a thing or two, which was, at the time, something you always need, because something like that happens in Australian cricket and first grade cricket. You get a lot of that, people with chips on their shoulders, a lot of chat, a lot of sprays here and there. And look, I found that some of the most competitive cricket I've played, just because purely people, you know, they played really hard, and you don't get that in second 11, I don't think, as much, just for the fact that people are there sometimes going through the motions in a way, just trying to get up, go up to first grade, do their thing. To the first team, just trying to do their thing. And even the other boys that are coming through, they're usually a bit more shy. They're not going to say things. And it's, you know, that's just the way it is. And I think at times minor counties can be harder cricket than even second 11. I've always sort of compared it to first grade in Australia, just for the pure fact that the way it's played, it's like that it's do or die. And, you know, people just love it.
Yeah, I like that. I like that comparison. But I have to ask, because you mentioned chats, and this is something which comes up a lot on the podcast for those who do go overseas in the winter. Yep. Obviously, compared to club cricket, I think it's safe to say that the Australian chat is a lot more intense. But in comparison to national county cricket, which one would you say has more sledges in it per se?
I think when I was a bit younger coming through the grade system in Australia, I think I got a lot more stick then. I think there are a few more older heads that actually gave it out in Queensland Premier cricket. So I'd probably say now probably minor counties, but I think I have heard, you know, a thing or two in Aussie grade cricket. So I can't really say too much. All I know is if you compare club cricket over here to club cricket in Wales or around the UK, like, yeah, there's probably a lot more stick and stuff that goes on over here for sure in Australia. But yeah, I think there's still a fair bit in minor counties.
That's interesting to know, because I've heard in Australia it does get brutal. It's absolutely, to be honest, a lot of cricketers do take it quite well, to be fair. They find it quite funny, but there is a massive, massive gulf in terms of the sledging levels and the intensity between club 100%. Cricket and grade cricket. And again, just one final thing with regards to that, Callum. What do you say is the best sledge you've ever heard on the cricket field? Would that be in grade cricket, minor county cricket, county cricket even? What do you say has been the absolute pinnacle of sledging for you?
Jeez, there's obviously a few, but some with some choice words. Oh, look, I can't really think of many off the top of my head, but there's some ones that do resonate in memory. A bit of Andrew Flintoff to Tino Best, Mind the Windows. That's one that gets thrown around as well. Still to this day, I think people use that. But yeah, look, I'd usually go off most recent memories, but I can't really think of anything at the moment that would really stand out. I think usually the best ones are when it's one-on-one with someone that's kept quiet and they actually win the battle. So yeah, none that I can think of, to be honest.
Fair enough. And to be fair, a lot of sledges do have some choice words, some expletives thrown in there, let's be honest. So probably best not to repeat them in a podcasting environment. But aside from sledging, aside from grade cricket, I think this is a perfect place to pick up our conversation about Glamorgan, one of the 18 first-class counties here in England and Wales. So in terms of Glam, Callum, what were your first impressions of Glamorgan as a cricket club? When did you start to really venture into becoming a professional cricketer at the club itself?
I think as soon as I came to Wales, I played a pre-season game for Newport against Glamorgan Academy. And I do believe that as soon as I played that game, Richard Ullman, the academy coach, I think he went back and sort of was asking a few questions about me. And from then on in, it was kind of like I was on their radar. They weren't too sure like where I was from, what I was doing here, like, et cetera. So it was just one of those things. I think I gradually got put into their system. Like, I was probably the same age as those academy boys at the time, and they were playing in that game. And, you know, I think what happened after that was I got asked to do a 12th man fielding job, you know, run some drinks and stuff for the first team. I did that a couple of times in the year, just out of nowhere, really, an extra £50 in the pocket. So couldn't go astray really at the time. And yeah, look, that was my first sort of glimpse into the club. And that obviously at the time that the club's changed dramatically since then. So now coaching changes, a lot of players have come and gone. And at the same time, I think that sort of 12th man sort of thing, I hadn't even played a second 11 game at all, that I was sort of just doing that. And yeah, then I think I kindly I played my first second 11 game probably like 2 years later after that, when I was about, when I was probably 18. And yeah, look, I had a half decent year of second 11 cricket, playing, batting all the way down 8-9, bowling 5-6 overs a game, basically just filling a void, filling a number there, to be honest. But look, as you get a bit old, as you start performing a bit more, then you stick, they give you a bit more responsibility in the team. That's all you can ask for as a young player, you know, to get that responsibility to bat higher in front of contracted players. And to do that, you got to put your hand up in certain situations and do well in club cricket or minor county. So that's kind of how I sort of got my foot in the door. And since then, to be honest, I didn't really look back. I just thought, just go for it. And I think my family was, at the time, I was probably about the year before I got signed in 2019. So about 2018, 2019, some of my family members sat me down, my grandparents, and said, look, we're behind you, whatever you want to do, like go back to Australia or this, that, and the other. And I just said, look, I'm going to play here. I'm going to play for Glamorgan, and I know I am. And at the end of the day, it didn't take long. I think it took maybe a couple more months, and I was signed mid-season 2019. And like, it was quite amazing. But it was one of those years where I had my biggest highs and my biggest lows. I went through a time, which you do as a professional cricket. Well, I wasn't even professional at the time, and I was scoring a bunch of runs early in the season. And then I just went through a month where I could not buy a run. And then suddenly, funnily enough, I went on holiday to Greece with a few of my family members. I came back and got 100 against Northampton, second 11, my first second 1100. And I think three weeks later, I scored another 70 odd against Surrey, and I was signed. And I literally, from about 3 weeks before, a week before that that Northants game, I would never have thought I was going to be signed. I thought I was there, done. That was it. But at the same time, it doesn't take much. They obviously saw something there in me. I didn't really just give up there. And yeah, that was kind of my pathway into Glamorgan. And that kind of gave me my first summer contract, which they don't have anymore, but that's sort of where it led. And yeah, it's taken me where I am now.
It most certainly has. And it's funny, actually, that I suppose the drought was broken against Northants, because your first class debut was rather memorable, shall we say, Callum. And it was against the same opposition, obviously the first 11 this time, as opposed to the second 11. Northamptonshire at Wantage Road in the 2020 Bobolish Trophy. What can you remember from that incredible day? I've got some stats here, just to kind of reinforce just how big and special this moment was. But in terms of the day itself, the occasion, receiving that cap and going on to that field as a first-class player for Glamorgan, what did that mean?
Yeah, look, it felt to me it was a long time coming. That season, I think there was a few occasions that I got told I was very close to playing, if not like be ready for the next game, and then the next game, and then the next game. And I think when I got told I was playing that game, it was a bit of like a relief, kind of going like, finally, like this is happening. Cause I was mentally prepared about, I'd say, a month even before that. And to actually have it come true, I think I'd already prepared for it. So I think I was ready. I could have let the occasion get the better of me, but I think emotionally I was already there. And I was prepared for that moment. And yeah, look, it was one of the better days. Actually, yeah, can't lie, it is the best day so far in my cricketing career, and hands down, really.
And rightfully so, because just for the listeners out there who don't know what we are alluding to, this was remarkable, to say the least. 106 from 94 balls in a first-class game. That is an outstanding strike rate. It really is. 11 fours, just the 9 sixes as well, which is probably more than I've hit in about a decade of club cricket. And you were just the fourth player in Glamorgan's history to score a century on first-class debut, considering that Glamorgan have had that status since 1921. That's not a bad stat at all. And actually, Callum, got a nice bit of trivia here for you. I want to see if you know. Do you know who the third player was? So the one immediately before you. I'll give you a clue. Happened against Yorkshire at Swansea in 1985.
I'm pretty sure it's Matt Maynard.
It is.
And I think what was funny is that when I actually walked off, he was the one, he had the biggest grin on his face. And for some reason, I just knew something. And I remember someone telling me just before we went out to bowl, told me something about about all the people that actually did. But at the time, I was just so emotionally, like, not too sure what was going on, to be honest, to answer that. But yeah, I did know that Matt got one on debut, which was, it's pretty funny. Well, I look back at it, it's pretty funny and kind of ironic, really, that he was the coach to see mine as well. So, which is, you know, it's awesome.
That's a good way to describe it. Definitely awesome. I thought that was class, to be honest. A good stat as well. Nice piece of county cricket trivia there. Just the fourth player in Glamorgan history. That is absolutely staggering, to say the least. And it wasn't just with the bats either. Let's be honest, with the ball as well. 1 for 20 from 9 overs in the first innings. Do you remember who that victim was on first-class debut?
Charlie Thurston.
Yes. Although, to be fair to Charlie, he did score 115.
He had got a couple. He cut his way to a few.
He most certainly did. He's a good player, to be fair, Charlie. And actually, just talking of trivia again, one of the funniest things I've ever heard here on the podcast with regards to Charlie Thurston, all of the Northants boys bring this up every single time. He takes so long to get his batting gear on. He will wait until literally he's in next to put on his thigh pad, his pads, his gloves. That would give me so much anxiety. I don't know how he does it, but clearly it works, shall we say, if he's going 115.
I'm pretty sure I've had some nightmares over that, getting timed out to the middle. So I don't think I'd ever... I've been in situations where I've cut it close, but I'd never be doing that, that's for sure.
No, I just couldn't. Like, I'm a tail ender, right? I've got a batting average of 11.5 it was last season. So in club cricket, that ain't great. You can tell I'm batting 10, maybe 9 at a push. But I just could not do that. As soon as, like, the fifth wicket falls, pads on, box on, gloves, helmet as well, I'm ready to go, but
not back in the team. Not back in the boys.
Hey, I'm getting ready to come in as a pinch hitter. That's what I'm doing. If the boys need me for a last ball four, I'm there. I'm ready. Go. I'm waiting to pounce like a tiger. But aside from that debut, I suppose, Callum, would you say that was your proudest moment? I'm guessing it was because of the occasion, because of the fanfare that would have came with it as well. Would you say that was the real pinnacle? Or would you say there's been another moment which has really topped it as well for you in a Glamorgan shirt so far?
Yeah, look, I think in terms of performance-wise and whatnot, that is obviously the pinnacle of what I've done. In terms of maybe the whole set scene, I think, look, there was no crowd there or whatever. So that's kind of the one disappointing thing that kind of doesn't get to me, but it's one of those things that doesn't exactly resonate massively in my head about. I think something that does is my main, like, I would say it was my first T20 game, that game at Taunton I talked about a few minutes back. And I think that crowd there, I think they always fill up their seats. And that was on Sky. And that was probably my main first class game. And yeah, look, that was unbelievable. And I think I literally said to Fozzie, our fielding coach at the time, I said, look, I'm going to take deep square boundary over in this side. And it was the opposite side to the change rooms at down in Taunton. And I was like, I'm going to go out here. And he goes, yeah, you sure about that? I'm like, yeah, yeah, I'll be deep square out here. Cause that was my job, to be the outfielder. Little did I know I was going to get the most stick I've ever got in my life out there. And they didn't hold back the Somerset crowd. And to be honest, it was great. The atmosphere was unbelievable. And that was my first sort of glimpse of, you know, I just knew then and there, like, this is pro cricket and this is what it's all about. The fans, the atmosphere here, the vitality blast, like that is it. All the cameras are on. And I think that moment there would be probably like my proudest moment, going, oh, like I'm here kind of thing, knowing that I'm there, knowing that it's a big occasion being here. And the North Ants game is obviously, yeah, look, it's unbelievable. Performance-wise, it's probably the best thing I've done in my cricketing career for sure. And I'm sure I'm going to take it all the way to the grave with me, of being a massive achievement of mine. Funnily enough, about that North Ants game, I mentioned about my first second 1100 being against North Ants as well. And it was actually the exact same situation. 9 wickets down, 100 run partnership with my 11, with my number 11. And it literally, you couldn't have scripted it any better. It was the, I would say it's pretty much the exact same innings. So
again, that's really weird, isn't it? But that's the game, isn't it? Sometimes. Yeah. And yeah, you do owe a little bit to Michael Hogan. What was it, 33 and out? I think he hit a few sixes as well, didn't he, in that innings?
Oh yeah, he can still hit a ball, Hogs. Can assure you that.
Can certainly bowl one as well, as we saw in the Royal London One Day Cup last year. He was absolutely outstanding. Brilliant. We gave so much praise, and rightfully so, to Hogs throughout that entire tournament. And actually, Callum, before we talk about the 2021 season, actually, that would be a nice place to pick up that conversation. A very memorable one for Glamorgan as a club, lifting a trophy for the first time in 17 years since the Tote Sport Cup in 2004, under the leadership of Robert Croft, a legend, down in South Wales. On the flip side of that, because obviously so far we've spoken about the highlights, the proud moments, but you alluded to beforehand the tougher moments as well. As we all know in the game of cricket, it's not an upwards trajectory. You know, we have peaks, we have troughs, we have ups, we have downs. That's just the nature of the beast in the game that we call cricket. In terms of toughest moments, what do you say has been your toughest moment in and around Glamorgan so far? Would you say it was that dry patch in 2018-19? Or, I don't know, is there something else which has proven to be even more difficult in the years that followed?
Yeah, I wouldn't say. I think when you get over a hurdle, you kind of, you keep pushing forward until the next one. And I think that one in 2018-19, that's sort of a distant memory. So you kind of get over that one and it's like, what's next? And the next one is always the biggest one kind of thing. And I think probably the most recent one would have been, I would say, probably being, I kind of did my ankle, I rolled my ankle in a game against Somerset in the Royal London Cup, and I couldn't play the next game. And that was quite a disappointment. And then I was actually fit for the next game after that. But because we'd been going pretty decently at the time, they decided to just, I didn't get picked in that team. And I think the boys that came in were also doing well as well. So it wasn't the fact that I got dropped. It was literally the fact that I'd got injured, because everyone in that squad was very close. Anyone could have played in that team and still done a good job. Done their role really well, and like that was part of our squad. And I thought, you know, that was pretty tough to me to not be able to be out there. But it was also good watching it from the sideline. I think, it was amazing to see, and I would have been loved to be a part of the whole tournament. I think I was only there for a couple games at the start, but look, I was always there and thereabouts. And what was kind of tough for me as well is the final. Actually, I was in Nottingham, but I wasn't actually a part of the day. I got ill the night before. I must have eaten something. Something made me feel terrible, and I wasn't sure if I was going to play in the game. I really didn't know. No one really knew the team what we were gonna go with. I think we're just waiting for, sort of at the toss, we were going to make a decision. And I was under the impression that I could have played. Never know, but it was always a possibility. And to get ill and not even, even if I was 12th man, to not even be part of the celebrations or the ceremony or anything like that, the day itself, I was watching in my hotel room ill. And that was a killer for me, because I just wanted to be there with the boys, with the guys and celebrate. But at the end of the day, I was still ecstatic in the hotel room. I think I had a few knocks on the door from a few neighbors saying to keep it down, but look, I was, I was extremely happy with that. But I would just say that was just a real bummer not to be there for a trophy for Glamorgan, considering it has been so long. And the whole, you know, the experience of being in a final as well, I think, or being a part of it, just seeing it is something that those boys will take in the years to come as well, which I won't. So that was something that a lot of people don't know, probably thought that I was 12th man for that game, et cetera, because I was in the squad, but I wasn't able to be there exactly. And that's probably something that was, it was kind of hard. It was hard, but it was also really good that the boys got the win anyway. So can't really complain.
You say that though, Callum, but I know you weren't there for the final and the day, and I suppose the celebrations afterwards, but you were part of the team. You know, you contributed along the way. So that win, every single time you walk past that trophy with the little pelicans on it, iconic Royal London One Day Cup, although you weren't there for the final, you can say, I contribute to that. And that's something which not a lot of players can say. When you think about Glamorgan as a club, that was their first trophy in 17 years. Think of all the great players who have come from Sapphire Gardens over the years who, unfortunately, were unable to win anything. And yet you've contributed directly to that trophy. And you look at all of the Glamorgan fans at Trent Bridge on that day and look what it meant to them. They are a fantastic fan base, in particular the ones who travelled. Like, they travelled all the way from Wales to Nottingham on a Thursday. They deserved that. They really did. So, honestly, it is disappointing. I get that. It is a little bit of a downer, but at the same time, you're part of it. And that's something that no one can ever, ever take away from you. And who knows, in the future, with Glamorgan, it's a squad going in the right direction. Might just be a matter of time before you get another chance. So keep your head up on that one, mate. Trust me, another chance will come up in the future. I've absolutely no doubt about that. But in terms of the rest of the 2021 season then, before we get on to teammates, and that's going to be fun. We've got some excellent questions for our teammate segment today. How would you summarise the 2021 season from a personal perspective, Callum? How would you go about putting it into your own words, per se?
Yeah, I think it was a big roller coaster, to be honest. I think COVID had a big tell on my own personal game and things like that. I think it weighed on me a lot that I couldn't come back to Australia for the winter last year. So I had probably 2 years directly in the UK. So I was probably stuck in a little bit of a rut at some period there, but I think I was speaking to the right people, older teammates, coaches and stuff. And look, I think performance wise, I had a big dip and also had a big rise as well. So performance wise was kind of one where in the county, in the Red Bull sort of stuff in first class cricket, I was pretty pleased with the way my batting came along. I think probably average mid 30s for the year, second 11, probably a bit higher and stuff. So didn't play all the games in the county championship, but played quite a few and contributed to a few performances that we put in there. And I think we put a really good shift in there. Look, I think as a club as a whole, we weren't very happy with the way we finished, but look, that's cricket. That can happen. We came against some really good teams that were, you know, really, really, you know, they were going in the right direction at the time. And I think, yeah, we were just a bit probably just underdone there. But back to me personally, I think, look, there's a long way for me to go T20 wise at the moment. I know that myself, and there's certain things I've been working on over here to get myself back to where I know I can be and what I've done in second 11 cricket. And look, it's not the exact same cricket in first 11, second 11. There's a lot more pressure on you in first 11 and with crowd and stuff like that. But it's something that I've always relished and a part of my game that I think I really want to keep pushing on is my bowling, my white ball bowling. And I think I can try contribute a little bit more to that in the future for Glamorgan, especially in the white ball format. But yeah, on a whole, look, it was a year of learning, I think, for myself. Well, I've taken a lot from last year. I've taken a lot from it. And I'd say it was a year to learn. And hopefully now I can just build on that, grab that experience and really take it forward for the next couple to come.
100%. It's that growth mindset, you know, taking the positives on, looking forward ahead to the future. And the future looked bright, to be honest, Callum. it really does. As I said, I saw you in 2020, obviously not in the ground. No one did because of COVID, unfortunately. But honestly, very impressive, not just in that Northants game as well, but the game against my county of Warwickshire at the end of the season, Ian Bell's farewell game. Oh, the fact that he didn't get to go out in front of a crowd, that is something which will always haunt me. Same with Jeetan Patel. But you really impressed me. So to be honest, just keep on working hard, keep on grinding away, listen to the advice of the older players in the squad. I think you'll do absolutely fine, mates. And talking of those older players, maybe one or two of them might appear in our next segment, because I've alluded to it throughout today's podcast. But before we get on to our concluding segment of today's show, we do, of course, have TCCP teammates. So for those who don't know how this works, basically in front of me, I've got an assortment of questions all about the teammates that Callum shares a dressing room with at Sophia Gardens. So this could get interesting. Callum Taylor, are you ready for TCCP teammates?
I don't know, but let's say yes.
Fantastic. That's what we like to hear here on the podcast. So to kickstart proceedings for today's teammate segment, we start off with an absolute classic here on the podcast. Callum, who is the teacher's pets at Glamorgan? Who is always hanging around the coaches, per se?
Oh, I'd have to say probably Tom Cullen. He's definitely one there. And any other names I can drop into it there. I'd say Tom Cullen. Tom Cullen for sure.
Fair enough. I like Tom. I have to say, we here on the podcast, we had him on actually. It was a week or two. In fact, it was a week after. It was exactly 1 week after that final in Trent Bridge. He's a lovely bloke, but he's the teacher's pet then. Always hanging around the coaches at Glam.
Yeah, I think it's just because he's that older head. I think he's in the second 11. He captains the second 11. So he looks to the coaches a lot to talk to them about tactics. I mean, the team's a bit young, a few academy boys, so he's always talking with them. And I think his role at the club now is based upon, trying to really work with the coaches and stuff like that. But, I think he just likes a lot of questions as well, Tom. He gets a lot of answers out of him. He sometimes asks a few questions for the sake of it. But, look, he's a question asker and he gets the answers, to be fair to him.
You see, I was interested about that because I don't think we've had Tom Cullen's name mentioned, but we have had one person's name mentioned again and again and again. A certain Marnus Labuschagne with regards to him.
Oh, how could I go past that one? Yeah, no, like, yeah, he probably eclipses TC, but at the same time, I think Marnus obviously doesn't play second 11s for obvious reasons. I mean, speaks for itself, but I think when Marnus is in it for first team coaches and stuff, 100%, like, Marnus is definitely a lurker. I don't think I've ever seen him away from Matt Maynard's ear, to be honest.
We've been told that so many times here on the podcast. He's always having a net. He's always chatting cricket. Yeah. I love him though. Honestly, I know obviously that he does perform against England and that is frustrating at times as an England fan, but how can you not love Marnus Labuschagne? He's a great character, live wire in the field, always chirping away. Hey, we need to get him on the podcast one day. That'd be a good podcast, in my opinion. But moving on to our next question then, Callum. Oh, this is an interesting one because it relates actually to something we touched upon earlier that you didn't want to happen in your cricket career. Who is the most likely to get timed out at Glamorgan during a game? Who's slow getting the kit on?
I wouldn't say. I don't know if he's completely slow to getting his kit on, but sometimes he doesn't know where his kit is in general. And that person's Lucas Carey. He's hopeless sometimes, to be fair to him. But if there was one person I can just see that happening to, it is probably Lucas Carey.
Well, fingers crossed for the Glamorgan fans that doesn't actually happen and we don't see him get timed out during a game. But we get that quite often on the podcast. People forgetting kits, people forgetting the batting order as well. That's something which comes up. That'd be an absolute nightmare. Imagine if you haven't got your kit on, you're called in next to bat. I'd just leave the dressing room, to be honest. I'd probably just go out there, hit wicket, first ball. I'm not facing any deliveries without box or pads on. Absolutely no chance. But moving on to our next one, talking of dressing, actually, this more of a normal clothes sense as opposed to cricket gear. Who are the best and worst dressed at Sapphire Gardens, Callum? Who's got the best attire? And whose garms are a little bit questionable, shall we say?
Oh, there's plenty of questionable ones, I can assure you that. I'd have to say the best, probably Prem Sisodia. He likes some expensive attire. And I say with worst look, as I said, there's a couple of ropey candidates. I think I could name a couple in a certain Marnus Labuschagne himself. Who else? Oh, there's plenty. Kieran Carlson, he can get a bit ropey with it. I have to mention Andrew Salter's shoes choices. I hope he listens to this as well. I'm sure he will, but his boots, sometimes they're very questionable, and I can assure you that.
What kind of fashion are they? What are the boots?
Oh, Andrew's a motorbike enthusiast, and sometimes he's wearing some questionable boots, and that's for sure. That's all I can give you.
I'll have to go on his Instagram. He always puts motorbike stuff on there. To be fair, I'll have a look what boots he's wearing, but goodness me, there's a lot there then. So Prem Sisodia, by far and away, best dressed. Always looks sharp.
I think so. He likes wearing some nice clothes, and you'll never see him in not nice clothes outside of the Glamorgan kit. So he'd have to be number one, to be honest with you. But look, there's a lot of boys in the dressing room that probably need to up their game. But I think that's also them not caring as much as well.
Yeah, to be fair, I can't really comment. My dress sense is absolutely terrible. It's basically just sports gear all the time. So I'm not going to judge. I can't comment. Definitely. If we're going to do a worst dressed here on TCCP, I would take the crown on that. Absolutely. I've got some very, very dodgy fashion choices, to say the least. Or moving on to our next one. I know exactly who this is going to be, Callum, but I want to see if you're on the same wavelength. Who's the biggest badger at Glamorgan? There should be an obvious one here.
Oh, yeah. Look, it's obviously probably Marnus. He lives and dies by cricket. But I think you'd be surprised. There are a lot of... In every change room, there's the undercover badgers. They're the ones that, you know, you don't notice, but they're there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, without a doubt, there's a few of them, I think, lurking around, a few secret ones who tell everyone they're not, but I'm pretty sure they're going home. They're looking on the play cricket on the videos and doing their little analysis work and stuff. So look, there's probably a few of them. I haven't clocked on to heaps of them, but there's enough of them out there, I think, especially in our change room. I'll be finding out a few more this year, I can assure you that.
What about yourself, Callum? Are you into your stats, your cricket analysis, the data stuff?
I would say I'm well up there, top three in the change room, without a doubt. I love it.
Interesting you say that. We have a quiz show, actually, Callum. If you ever want to come on, you can be our guest. We'll have a county versus county one. Get a teammate from Glamorgan. We'll get you against George Rhodes and Scott Steele from Leicestershire. That'll be an interesting matchup, to say the least.
Yeah, the thing is, they'd probably belt me because I'm not great with my British cricketing history.
Just Australia?
Yeah. Well, no, it's probably the modern era county cricket from like probably 2015, 2016. But I think anywhere before that, where I haven't really been in with it, I'd probably struggle a little bit. But look, I'm getting a lot better since I've been playing over in the UK. So hopefully, you never know. There could be some questions in there that could take my liking.
We'll have to make it happen. We will be in touch, Callum. Let's just say that'd be interesting. Glamorgan versus Leicestershire on a question of cricket. We'll have to make that happen. I think that'd be good, to be fair. And moving on to our next one then. Our penultimate question for today's teammate segment. A classic here at the podcast. Who is the dressing room joker? At Glamorgan, who loves a practical joke or a prank at Sapphire Gardens?
There's one bloke. There's one bloke who brought pretty much all the pranks in. And I still get him today. I got one on the weekend, actually, because I played with him. Michael Nessa. he lives and dies by it. One of his biggest MOs would be Siri-ing the alarm clocks on your phone, getting Siri up. And he'll put about 10 alarms for a certain time. He'll add all the alarms. And I tell you what, he got a few boys this year at about 3 a.m. in the morning, 2 a.m. in the morning, alarm goes off, not having a clue who said it, what happened. he got probably 4 or 5 people on the same day on a rain delay down in Lancashire. So, well, up in Lancashire, probably from Wales, but he's definitely someone. He's a prankster. He's definitely a prankster. And it's the same MO. He used it on the weekend as well to a few of our boys from the Gold Coast Dolphins. So, look, he's still pulling his pranks. Same old Michael.
I can't say I've heard that one on the podcast before. Genuinely, then that's his
MO.
That's a horrid one as well. Waking up at 3 o'clock in the morning, thinking, "Where's this alarm coming from?"
Yeah,
I tell you, I'd be worse though if he hit the phone. That'd be worse. That is true.
There are a few ones. A lot of the boys want to play pranks on Marnus. I think we were in
like what?
At Old Trafford. I think everyone got in on it, to be honest. And we tied all this kid up to the roof, and that was in a rain delay. And I think, it took him about an hour to get it all down.
Seriously?
Yeah. It's lucky nothing was happening in the day. It was completely rained off. I think he was already out by then, and had probably about 14 hits in the day already in the indoor school. But yeah, I think, we put all this kid up on the roof, and yeah, I think after a while, he got so many pranks played on him. I think after a while that he just let him happen.
He'll be back with a vengeance this season. You watch, Callum. He'll be the one pulling the pranks.
He had a few dynamic duo. He got his revenge in the end on a few people, I put it that way.
How?
All I know is he got his revenge. I'm not exactly sure how exactly, but I wasn't always there for him, but yeah, I think he got them in the end.
Again, if we get Marnus on the podcast, I'll have to ask about that. That sounds very interesting indeed, how he got them back. Tying his kit on the roof or the ceiling?
So I think on Old Trafford, there's like these wooden stilt sort of palings that go across, and they're kind of real thin. And I think we were tying like his pads around that, etc., like that, putting his gloves up there and tying them together with shoelaces and, you know, that old chestnut.
I can't say I've heard that on the podcast. And the fact that he did it to Marnus as well. Innocent Marnus. Boys, come on.
Yeah, exactly. Wow.
Well, I'll say innocent Marnus. Again, we'll have to find out what the pranks were in revenge, I suppose. He might not be so innocent in the prank department, but we'll have to wait and see. And Callum, moving on to our final teammate segment of the day. One which, for every single teammate's Glamorgan special, I suppose, your name has come up for. Who is the most likely to appear on Love Island in the Glamorgan dressing room? Who would you say would be a real asset to that TV reality show?
Oh, look, there's been some boys that I'd probably put up that have left the club now, but there's definitely one right now that stands out for me, and that would be no other than Dan Douthwaite.
Good shout.
He loves himself a bit too much sometimes, Danny boy, but yeah, I'd put him up there, very high up there, to be quite honest with you.
No, that's a good shout. And again, big up to Dan Douthwaite. He was our first ever guest on the podcast. First ever, episode 3, talk about the 2020 T20 Blast. So we love Dan here on the podcast, but I reckon it'd be a good shout. And actually, Callum, I made this promise to Tom Cullen because, as I said, he mentioned your name with regards to that segment when we got him on the podcast. He wanted to know if you would actually go on. Would you ever be interested in going on Love Island?
Oh, probably not, to be honest with you.
I don't know. I don't know where my life would be, but I seriously, yeah, probably not. I think that'd scare me a bit, cameras being everywhere in my day to day. I'd probably say the wrong things. I don't really know, to be honest. But look, it's one of those things that people on there change their life dramatically. But look, there's cricket there for me, and I probably wouldn't. The cameras are too daunting, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. Not that I'll ever be on it, unfortunately. The looks department, again, like my batting, a little bit lacking, to be honest. But I just could not be in there for, what is it, 24 hours a day with cameras on. And I'm not being funny. You know, the attention is all well and good, but the pressure that they must be under as soon as they exit that villa, it is a villa, I think, in the Balearic Islands, must be absolutely intense. So, yeah, there's your answer, Tom. We finally got it. We finally got the answer. He would not go on to Love Island, which is good news for Glamorgan fans because it's during the season as well. Stick to your cricket, Callum. That's all I'll say. We want to see you in the county circuit, not in some Love Island villa in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea. But before we end today's episode then, Cal, just one final question really about the upcoming season. It's not that far away. It's less than 2 months away now. We're recording this on the 9th of February, 2022. County cricket is on the horizon, which is absolutely fantastic for all of us here in England and Wales. What would you say your aspirations and ambitions are for this upcoming season, Callum? What do you want to achieve in 2022 for the Welsh County?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think I've done a lot of reflecting this off season, and obviously a lot of goal setting. And I think one of my biggest goals last year, and I think now it's become more potent now to me, is to really stamp my authority on a role where I can play in all formats and be a consistent member of, kind of be one of the first couple names on that team sheet. And that's something that I want to, you know, put down pretty quick in the season and put in performances that, you know, can better the county, better the teams in general. So, yeah, I think for me as well, I think a big one has been really nailing that T20 cricket, finding my role in that team, wherever that is, to be honest with you. And yeah, look, I think the main one is just getting in the first team and putting in winning performances. And look, I've full confidence in myself to be able to do that. But look, it's one thing saying that, one thing doing it, and that's something for sure that I want to be doing, actually contributing to wins for Glamorgan. And look, if I'm doing that, then I'm sure I'll be a regular in the starting team, and that's kind of where my head's at right now. I don't want to be looking too far ahead, but yeah, look, I just want to be thereabouts every single game, playing a part in the first team.
Well, Callum, it goes without saying, but all of us here at the County Cricket Podcast are wishing you nothing but the very best of luck heading into the rest of this season and, of course, the years beyond as well. Because, as I said, you are a good talent. I really like what I saw in 2020 and in glimpse in 2021 when you're on the pitch. Honestly, Glamorgan fans, I think you've got a bit of a gem on your hands here in Mr. Callum Taylor. But, Callum, I mean, that is pretty much a wonderful place to wrap up what has been an excellent episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I hope that you've enjoyed it just as much as I have. I think it's been a very, very interesting chat, to say the least. But before we say our final goodbyes, do you just have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
Oh, no, everything's all good, mate. Yeah, look. Yeah, just, I'd like probably just say go glam.
Nice and simple, two words, which I think are a wonderful place to wrap up the episode. So, yeah, that is pretty much it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's show. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we will see you on the next one.